You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Wednesday, August 12, 2026. The Wait, New Rule on Decommissioning Offshore Assets Aims to Ease Burden on U.S. Producers. Published by RBN Team. Long-standing U.S. rules around decommissioning offshore oil and gas platforms were rewritten by the Biden administration in 2024, a move designed to ensure that owners of those assets bear the often significant cost of deactivating them. But the Trump administration paused their implementation in early 2025, promising to revise or overhaul them as part of a broader effort to reduce federal regulations and boost domestic energy production. In today's RBN blog, we'll examine the issue and the changes included in the administration's proposed rule, which aims to reduce the regulatory burden without shifting decommissioning liabilities to taxpayers. As we noted in Back to Life, most U.S. offshore E&P business occurs in the U.S. Gulf, which generates about 14% of U.S. crude oil output. The federal government regulates most of that activity along the Outer Continental Shelf, or OCS. Its oversight begins about 3.5 miles off the coast of Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi. For Texas and Florida, its jurisdiction starts about 10 miles offshore. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, and the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, or BSEE, are tasked with managing Gulf activity, from overseeing lease sales to expanding production areas to issuing rules on what E&Ps must do with wells, platforms, and associated infrastructure once their projects have run their course. The decommissioning process for those offshore assets includes permanently plugging wells, removing all associated infrastructure, platforms and pipelines, and clearing the seafloor of obstructions. Specifically, wells are considered idle if they have not been used in the past 5 years for E&P operations or if the lessee has no plans for such activities. Platforms are also considered idle if they've been toppled or destroyed, or haven't been used in the past 5 years for production. For expired leases, project owners must deactivate their operations within a year. The Department of the Interior, or DOI, regulates the entire exercise through the BSEE and the BOEM. Discontinuing offshore E&P facilities is an expensive undertaking, typically costing millions of dollars, but varying widely because of the unique structures involved and expertise needed. For that reason, lessees might seek to postpone decommissioning activities until economic conditions are more favorable, although that carries additional environmental risks since offshore infrastructure is especially prone to corrosion and bad weather. That could help explain why the number of Gulf wells and platforms overdue for decommissioning has surged in recent years. According to the BSEE, more than 40% of wells and 50% of platforms missed their one-year decommissioning deadline from 2010 to 2022, but that had jumped to 75% for wells and 79% for platforms by June 2023, the most recent numbers available, with more than 2,700 wells and 500 platforms overdue for decommissioning at that time. Those totals mostly represent infrastructure where the active lease had expired in addition to wells and platforms in idle areas. To oversee decommissioning, the DOI developed procedures to identify and track unused infrastructure, review and approve lessee plans to deactivate and remove assets, and estimate the cost associated with the entire process. The BSEE is tasked with evaluating and estimating decommissioning costs, while the BOEM determines and secures the appropriate amount of financial guarantees using the BSEE's projections. The DOI requires lessees to provide bonds or other measures, called Supplemental Financial Assurance, or SFA, to demonstrate they can meet these deactivation expenses. A decade ago, the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, analyzed the federal government's potential financial exposure to decommissioning expenses. The nonpartisan government agency found that many procedures that BSEE and BOEM had historically used in overseeing deactivation activities were flawed, leaving the government increasingly exposed to end-of-life lease obligations. The GAO report estimated decommissioning costs at $38.2 billion, far above the $2.3 billion in financial assurances that had been collected. The GAO had doubts about BSEE's decommissioning price projections. Before December 2015, lessees were not required to report such estimated expenses, which were considered proprietary information. For the remaining $35.9 billion in liabilities, BOEM held or required about $2.9 billion in bonds and other fiscal assurances, but it issued waivers for the remaining obligations. More on that in a bit. By June 2023, the GAO said the DOI held about $3.5 billion in bonds from companies to cover decommissioning costs estimated at $40 billion to $70 billion. The GAO's report showed that less than 8% of estimated decommissioning liabilities in the GOM were covered by supplemental bonds. This was because of the waivers that BOEM was exercising if it determined that a lessee had the financial ability to fulfill its decommissioning duties. The regulator would measure the economic strength of a lessee using a set of criteria that included an independently audited financial statement that showed its net worth was more than $65 million. Once a lessee met financial muster, the co-lessees, or prior lessees, would also be exempt from providing the supplemental bonds. The GAO found the use of that financial test problematic. If a company passed the test but later became insolvent or filed for bankruptcy, it would be unable to provide financial assurance or additional fiscal guarantees. According to the DOI, about 36 offshore oil and gas operators filed for bankruptcy between 2009 and June 2023, some of which had significant decommissioning obligations. For instance, when Louisiana-based, privately held Cox Operating and its six subsidiaries filed for bankruptcy in May 2023, the group operated some 477 platforms in the Gulf, or 37% of the region's total. When Cox filed for bankruptcy, its offshore decommissioning liabilities were not extinguished. Producing assets sold during Cox's subsequent restructuring transferred those associated obligations to buyers, but many uneconomic properties were abandoned. Under federal offshore regulations, those remaining plugging, abandonment, and platform removal liabilities reverted to predecessor owners. The case underscored the financial risks of legacy offshore assets and prompted a Biden administration review, leading to significant changes to the financial assurance requirements. The new rules, published in the Federal Register in June 2024, used probabilistic estimates of decommissioning costs to determine how much SFA operators must provide. The revised estimates were designed to reflect actual decommissioning costs from completed projects, including pipeline removal. The BZ developed three confidence levels, P50, P70, and P90, that represented the probability of fully covering decommissioning costs. The BOEM chose the P70 standard, reasoning that it struck the right balance between protecting taxpayers from offshore decommissioning liabilities and preserving access to capital for continued investment. Meanwhile, the BOEM whittled down its financial health test criteria from 5 to 2, with drillers evaluated based on 1. Their Nationally Recognized Statistical Rating Organization, or NSRO, credit rating, and 2. The level of proved reserves in an existing leasing area. Companies without an investment-grade credit rating or sufficient proved reserves would be required to provide SFA. The 3-to-1 test requires at least $3 of known remaining oil and gas reserves for every $1 of estimated decommissioning liability. Under the new regulations, companies were to provide financial assurance through surety bonds, decommissioning accounts, or other guarantees. The BOEM forecast in a 2024 report that supplemental bond requirements could reach nearly $11 billion for the OCS, an increase of more than $8 billion from November 2023. The pushback was swift. Critics argued that the surety market would not be able to handle the hefty bonding requirements baked into the new rule, potentially making bonds unavailable or prohibitively expensive, especially for smaller producers. Not long after the rule dropped, the Gulf states of Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, along with several oil and gas trade groups, filed suit in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana, arguing that the new requirements went too far. Those arguments found a sympathetic ear within the second Trump administration, which said the 2024 revisions discouraged investment and unnecessarily tied up capital that could otherwise be used for offshore development. It began a review of the decommissioning rules in May 2025 and published its Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NOPR, in March 2026. Following the initial 60-day comment period and an extension through May 15, the final rule is in the post-comment review stage and could be published at any time. As we noted in Blankets, a NOPR spells out an agency's plan to address a problem or accomplish a goal and essentially says the proposed rule is a done deal unless there's a compelling reason that hasn't already been considered. The revised rulemaking does not eliminate decommissioning requirements. Operators must still plug abandoned wells, remove platforms and pipelines when required, and restore lease sites. The debate centers on who must post the financial guarantees for those actions up front, not whether that cleanup will occur. Let's look at the major aspects of the new rule proposed by the Trump administration. One shift allows the BOEM to explicitly consider the financial strength of jointly and severally liable predecessors when deciding whether SFA is needed, recognizing that prior owners, not just the current owners, remain legally responsible for decommissioning obligations. At the same time, the proposal lowers the minimum credit rating threshold from investment grade to speculative grade, meaning more companies would avoid the need for additional financial assurance. The rule also reduces the decommissioning cost estimate used to calculate SFA requirements from the more conservative P70 estimate to the P50 estimate, further reducing required coverage while preserving the agency's authority to recover full cleanup costs if necessary. The new rule includes several other changes designed to increase flexibility. The BOEM would allow financial assurance instruments that protect multiple beneficiaries, expand the use of the previously noted 3-to-1 test for certain right-of-way holders, and permit agency approval of decommissioning contracts and schedules instead of new financial assurance when abandonment work is expected within a year. It also eliminates the requirement that companies post an appeal bond equal to the SFA demand in order to stay enforcement during appeals, citing concerns that the requirement unnecessarily tied up capital. Finally, because many companies have not yet been required to comply with the 2024 rule, the 3-year phase-in period is restarted under the revised framework, giving operators additional time to adjust while reducing the near-term financial burden on offshore investment. The BOEM estimates the proposed revisions would produce a substantial reduction in SFA requirements over the next 2 decades, reflecting the agency's effort to balance taxpayer protection with continued offshore investment. According to the agency's Regulatory Impact Analysis, or RIA, the rule would generate between $5.2 billion and $7.2 billion in discounted regulatory savings from 2026 through 2045, depending on the discount rate used. On an annualized basis, those savings equate to roughly $485 million per year, capital that operators could redirect toward exploration, development, production, and decommissioning activities rather than financial assurance instruments. The savings stem primarily from narrowing the circumstances in which SFA would be required and reducing the amount companies must post when it is. By recognizing the financial strength of predecessor companies, lowering the qualifying credit rating threshold, adopting less conservative decommissioning cost estimates and expanding compliance options, BOEM expects fewer operators will need to secure additional bonds or other financial instruments. The agency says these changes will reduce regulatory costs without shifting decommissioning liabilities to taxpayers, since current lessees and their predecessors would remain jointly and severally liable for cleanup obligations. The Wait was written by Robbie Robertson and appears as the 5th song on side one of the band's debut album, Music from Big Pink. The lyrics are a pastiche of Southern images regarding strange characters you might meet on the backroads of rural America. Nazareth comes from the brand inside of Robertson's Martin D28 that he was using while composing the song. It is the hometown of the Martin guitar manufacturing plant in Pennsylvania. Fanny refers to Robertson's friend, Fanny Steloff, who founded the New York City Gotham Book Mart he was fond of visiting. Anna Lee is singer/drummer Levin Helm's lifelong friend, Anna Lee Amston from Turkey Scratch, Arkansas. Crazy Chester was a bizarre character in Fayetteville, Arkansas, who carried a holstered cap gun with him everywhere he went. Released as a single in August 1968, The Wait only went to number 63 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles chart but became a staple of airplay on progressive FM radio in the US in the late 1960s. The song appears in the film Easy Rider, but the version heard on the soundtrack album is by a group called Smith, due to licensing issues. Personnel on the record were Levin Helm, lead, backing vocals, drums, Rick Danko, lead, backing vocals, bass, Robbie Robertson, acoustic guitar, Richard Manuel, Hammond organ, and Garth Hudson, piano. Music from Big Pink was recorded in early 1968 at A&R Recorders, Studio A, in New York City and Gold Star Studios in Capitol in Hollywood. Produced by John Simon, the album was released in July 1968 and went to number 30 on the Billboard 200 albums chart. Al Kooper said in Rolling Stone magazine, "This album was recorded in approximately 2 weeks. There are people who will work their lives away in vain and not touch it." The album title refers to the Pink House, aka Big Pink, that band members Danko, Hudson, and Manuel were living in at 2188 Stoll Road, later readdressed as 56 Parnassus Lane, in West Saugerties, New York, while their first album was being written and recorded. The house is still there, and actually available for rent on VRBO. One single was released from the LP. The band was a Canadian-American rock band formed in Toronto in 1967 by Rick Danko, Garth Hudson, Richard Manuel, Robbie Robertson, and Levin Helm. They were formerly known as Ronnie Hawkins' backing band, The Hawks. They toured with Bob Dylan as his first electric backing band in 1966. They released their debut album for Capitol Records in 1968. In 1976, the band filmed and recorded The Last Waltz at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco, a documentary celebrating the band before they officially broke up in 1978. The band, minus Robertson, began touring and occasionally recording again in 1983 until 1998. They have released 10 studio albums, 9 live albums, 10 compilation albums, and 32 singles. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1994. All the band members had successful careers as solo artists. Richard Manuel died in March 1986, Rick Danko died in December 1999, Levon Helm died in April 2012, and Robbie Robertson died in August 2023.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.